Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Hola, socios. Hola, equipo. My name is Neil.
I'm Liam.
This is John Nurnberger from Kansas City, Missouri, USA.
Moray Field near Brisbane in Queensland.
Edinburgh.
Barcelona.
And I'm a socio.
I'm
a socio of the Big Interview.
My name is Neil. I'm originally from Scotland, but now living in Barcelona. Hey, why did I become a socio? Well, you could reference Mr. Hunter's knowledge and access to some great football characters, but I'm going to go for his exceptional use of swear words. He really seems to strike the right chord. They're not overused. As a Scotsman, it's something I really value. My favourite interview of the season, I'm going to go for Kevin Kilbane. He came across as a really open, honest, funny and down-to-earth guy. In general, seemed like the sort of person you could happily sit down, have a pint with him and just listen to his stories.
From Backpage, I'm Martin Gregg, and this is the Big Interview Q&A for March. The questions, as ever, come from our sponsors at Bet365 and our socios at patreon.com/GrahamHunter, where you can sign up to access extra big interviews and other exclusive content, including the audio versions of all of Graham's columns for ESPN. On the line from Barcelona is Graham Hunter. Graham, the first question comes from Curtis Dean. What are your thoughts on the potential affiliation between Barca and Ajax? It will be good for the Barca players to gain first-team experience by going on loan to Ajax, but surely the only winners here are going to be Barca.
It's interesting. I'm not so sure, Curtis, because I think that I've seen sufficient numbers of youngish players come to Barcelona, and irrespective of the era, there's a level of intensity of pressure and constant pressure that even footballers who think they've had it tough or demanding at other football outfits need to shift their perceptions, shift their level, even before you look at how they play. And I'm not sitting here in awe and saying Barca's the biggest club in the world by any means, but there's a repetitive theme, and it's something that's consistently pointed out by ex-players. The one I work with most is Steve Archibald, although I speak to many Spanish, Catalan, and ex-Barca players of other nationalities. But Steve always, when he's analysing players who come in, talks first about the instant indications of mentality he gets. And, for example, he's always found that Coutinho looks like a player in his view who looks quickly lost and who is used to playing jazz solos rather than making sure that everybody in the band is in tune. And therefore, the point I'll come back to is that I think De Jong is not part of your question in that they've had to pay a king's ransom for him. And he looks a clever footballer, and he's patently an intelligent, adept footballer. How he adapts, we'll have to wait and see. De Ligt, who's part of this new idea that the relationships between the club should take advantage of the centre-half's desire to play not only with De Jong, but at Football Club Barcelona. There's in recent days, there's been a kind of cute photo, just as there was with Mark van Bommel, and a cute photo of De Ligt as a 6-7-year-old in his Barca kit during the summer, visiting the Camp Nou, and evidently had been taken there by his parents on a Costa Brava holiday, done the tour whenever that was. But for my taste, I haven't seen sufficient to be, you know, crystal clear about the player. And then there's the Barca factor that I was talking about, that when players come in, automatically they have to find a new gear in their daily performance. They have to become accustomed to playing with Messi or with Busquets or in a time when things aren't going particularly well. And it costs. It really costs. So if you say automatically the winners are Football Club Barcelona, then, you know, I'd say there's a fair wind in your favour that you could be right. But guaranteed, you know, I'm not so sure. And then secondly, what the idea is that the relationship currently between the two boards and the two directors of football at Barca and Ajax is such that there is now a gentle indication that there are one or two B-team players, Oriol Busquets being one, Miranda being another, the most famous case of all being Ricky Puig, Ricky Puig being this mercurial, sharp, brave, but very slender, very young footballer who the current organiser of the football department, Pep Segura, was trying to push out of the club because he was too skinny and too small. Will they never learn? He has, because of Valverde's willingness to take him on the tour, summer tour of the States last year, his emergence has become accelerated, much more demanded by fans and media. And during the subsequent year, whether playing for Barca B or coming on and playing for Catalonia the other day against Venezuela, Ricky Puig is patently, you know, not yet in the category of De Jong or De Ligt, in that they're much older, they've played Champions League football, they're about to joust for a semi-final Champions League place if they were to put Juventus out. And Ricky Puig is several stages behind that. But in terms of his profile and his talent, in terms of the expectation that a footballer like him generates at Barca, it's clear that those who, like you, are reacting positively to the idea of footballers being loaned out from Football Base or for Barca B to Ajax, Todibo is another one. Todibo, the centre half that they bought from Toulouse and brought in at Christmas. There's a perception that this is going to be a very good ball playing centre half. And where you loan somebody, if anybody listened to the podcast we did earlier this season with Julian Lescott, then you'll understand that the science of why you move a player out on loan and then where you move them to, with what goals, how you monitor them, what you expect back from that loan period, that science is becoming far more, not regulated, but far more calibrated. It's becoming treated as a subject treated as a process. It genuinely becomes scientific. And therefore, I do see your point that the way that Ajax are not only thoroughly willing to play footballers of talent when they're young, they almost have to do it as of necessity, at least until recently, when Marc Overmars' ability to spot and promote footballers like, De Jong and De Ligt come to mind because they're coming to, well, at least De Jong is already coming to the Camp Nou, and it looks like De Ligt will come there too. But Taliafico at left back is very promising. Tadic has now got a completely revindicated reputation. But the fact remains that Ajax are going to be well over a couple hundred million euros better off, Yeah, I don't think, if you look at the way that they've renewed Marco Vermaar's contract as director of football, I don't think their idea is going to change. And therefore, if this relationship, this little bridge were built between Barca and Ajax, there's a commonality of goal. There's a chance of taking the price of the De Ligt deal down a little bit, or at least moderating it. And there's the concept that for so long as the right people stay in charge at Ajax, that's the board. Van der Sar's importance at the moment is, given that his role is about finance and marketing, is less vital, but his presence still guarantees the idea of that mid-90s Van Gaal side, Overmars as football director. I think that the idea of young players of great ability being loaned out there to get experience, they're playing in a league whereby the idea of what you do with the ball generally, not just at Ajax, is generally along the lines that Barcelona want to see their players developing. And therefore, I can see that Barca would be eager to seal this deal. It makes real common sense. And if it were to be the case for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, then suddenly you've got a better bridge between Barca B and Barca than is currently being provided, because the argument about is there enough talent, if they handle things well in development and football Basi at Barcelona, will be like, well, what do we do with this talent if there was to be an increase in the flow? And when we saw the cup game, I'll close on this, when we saw the cup game where Valverde wasn't trying to get out of the cup but was taking notice of particularly Carlos Puyol's argument at the end of last season that Barcelona were overly obsessed by the cup and that was costing them in the Champions League. And Valverde experimented, and if you watched it, then Curtis, you'll have spotted the fact that when there was a couple of B-team players used, Miranda is a good case. You know, they lasted to halftime and about 5 minutes after halftime, and Levante looked like they were going to run away with the tie. And I think at that stage the score was 2-0 to Levante. And okay, they got overturned, and I think Coutinho got a late penalty. My memory dims a little bit, but I think that one was 2-1, and Barca eventually went through. But it was patent that the level of football that Barca B play at the moment, or are playing in at the moment, isn't a sufficient test even to face Levante in a cup tie. Therefore, there is real profitability, and I'd hope that your point, Curtis, is augmented by the fact that if Ajax choose the players well, that they get a good fee for taking the players on loan, or a good sell on if they have it could be that the players aren't just loans; some of them might be sold with a buyback, which is just an official way of agreeing a fee for the whole thing. You sell them for four. You sell a player to Ajax for four. The buyback clause is 10, and you just say, okay, for that year spent with you, we'll pay 6 when we get him back. The book part of it, or the accountancy book part of it, I'm a lot less interested in. But about your idea that it can be, in theory, very worthwhile all round, yeah.
Second question is from Diana Yao, who would have recorded her question, but she's not feeling well. Get well soon, Diana, she asks. As a Manchester United supporter, am I wrong to say that my club does not stand a chance against Barcelona?
I echo Martin's sentiments. Get very well very soon. You're important to us. Yeah, I think you already know the answer to this question. I think that you are toying with the question and toying with me, in that, you know, the word impossible, when you're looking at the types of results that Solskjaer has had since taking over. If you look at the Harry Houdini Act that they came up with at the Parc des Princes, if you look at items within their repertoire that can be very important. Barcelona might start as favourites, and I think justifiably, in that they've been very rigorous this year, this season, very intense, very concentrated. It's absolutely clear that while they stand, you know, not on the verge of, but within sight of a third treble, that a one-off match against Valencia in the Copa final is something they can, however you treat it, you know, in the week building up to the final, they can put that aside. They will win the title in Spain. I don't see circumstances, even if Messi were injured, I don't see the circumstances where Barcelona don't complete that title. And therefore, particularly given that Leo Messi said at the beginning of the season, as you very well know in the Gamper game, that his main task in his eyes as new captain was to be a proper successor to the last two captains who he admired, Xavi and Iniesta, and to bring that beautiful trophy that we crave so much back to the Camp Nou. And therefore, the Champions League is a vast priority for Barcelona. And when you get elite players who are so concentrated, so determined, who haven't lost focus, none of the crap that goes on in the worlds of, or the atmospheres of international footballers is affecting them. When you get that, then they become a very potent force. Now, let's not discard other sides, like, for example, Juventus or City, Liverpool, you know, still clear, strong candidates to win, never mind get through. Sorry, Spurs. But despite that, City possessed certain things. First of all, when Leo Messi played against Venezuela, was it? Yeah, played 90 minutes, a 3-1 defeat against Venezuela, and came home not because of a pact with Scaloni that he only played 50% of the international matches. He came home because he had a groin problem. A couple of weeks ago, in between the hat-trick he scored at Sevilla and the hat-trick he scored at Betis, I think during the second Clásico of that spell, the only time that they've played, the two sides have played twice within the space of 3 days, he was caught just holding that part where the top of the thigh meets the groin, where pubalgia is the name of the affliction here in Spain, and every sports person, man, woman, amateur, professional, knows that if you have a groin injury, which I'm suffering at the moment, it's deeply painful, it's deeply unsettling, and with Messi it reoccurs. So he came home because he had more of that, and so how does that leave the build up to the tie? Definitely with a question mark over it. I think more creatively, because I think probably everybody except for diehard United fans wants Messi to play in that so that we see a proper test club to club. But United have things that Barcelona don't like. United are able to play very vertically, very quickly, and I don't mean long balls, you know what I mean, in that on form, they can go back to front via passing movements very quickly, and what's more, say particularly Rashford, but Martial if available, Pogba if on form, they have a pace that can get through the middle of a team, and one of the things, as you well know, DY, from watching Barcelona, is that if you can isolate Busquets, if you can rob him or rob whoever's next to him or rob the person who's just in front of him and then sprint away, teams that leave Barcelona, who can supersede the idea that Rakitic and or Vidal are Busquets' bodyguards, if you can make Busquets turn and run, then Barcelona can look vulnerable if Gerard Piqué is in one of his excursions up front and that happens to coincide with Busquets being cut out of the play. Barcelona don't quite have a soft underbelly, but they can be opened up by clever, pacey, vertical counterattacks, and United have that in their locker. And in all honesty, while I see Barcelona maybe in an epic second leg, probably going through, and it would be a lie not to say that they start favourites, I still don't think that the tie is as cut and dried. If Manchester United can find form, they've also got aerial power, which is probably the second thing that Barcelona like least about opponents. And they've latterly tried to cope with it, particularly if you watch them defending free kicks in the final third, you know, defensive free kicks in the final third of their half. They've now got this system where they hold a very high line, so there's a chasm of space, almost like a breakwater between Ter Stegen and the high line, so that if he's got to come for the ball, which he doesn't have much taste for, he's not coming into a cluster of bodies, and they're hoping obviously that somebody will stray offside. But it looks very odd. They're not unique in using it, but instead of defending sort of deep or in the middle of the penalty box, they leave this chasm of space. And if you time your run a Marc-Andre ter Stegen is neither a particularly tall goalkeeper, nor is he particularly happy with crosses from either set plays or open play. And he's now decided to punch rather than catch. So they've been working on this Achilles heel, but it remains there. Maybe they've diminished it a little bit. And therefore, in summary, I think my point of view hasn't surprised you in any way whatsoever. There's a marginal favouritism for Barcelona. If everybody's fit and on form, then they go through. If everybody's not fit and on form, Manchester United have learned not just from the second leg, where they were still outplayed in Paris. I think that's arguable. But if they've learned from the way in which they were rabbits in the headlight to PSG at Old Trafford, and if they win that leg rather than losing as they did to Tuchel's team, then we've got a tie on. We definitely have a tie on. And it's at that stage where in recent seasons, whether it be in Paris or Turin or Rome, Barcelona have reached for extra gears and haven't found them. So I think it's a pretty fascinating tie. And what for your question to become needless worrying, then United also need to have their proper players fit. That injury list, which has been so troublesome, that needs to decrease, and they need to go into the game with a really smart tactical plan, at which point it's game on.
Next up is Steve Freeth, Chief Inquisitor at our sponsors, Bet365.
From a bookmaking point of view, it'd be good to see this Manchester City quad beaten. Who, if anyone, will stop them from doing it?
First of all, I think, and Steve knows this, I think that Liverpool can and should win the title. I think that if you're brutally honest about it, City not only have the better squad overall, but probably still field the best 11. If each coach has their very best 11 fit, then I think in terms of individual talent and previous winning experience, including titles, I think that City have a noticeable edge. The reason that I think that Liverpool can and should bring home the Premier League title, Steve, is that they have a distinct advantage in their fixtures between now and the end of the season. And I mean that even including the fact that they too have got a European date, which is very, very important, or European dates, against Porto. But I look at what I call the sort of, with the Masters coming up, I look at Amman Corner, where, and I'll probably, dear socios, get my list of my order of fixtures a little bit skew if. But my perception is that they play something, City play something like Crystal Palace, and then three games against Spurs, two in the Champions League, one in the league, and then United. And I look at Liverpool, and while there are one or two dangerous pit stops for them, and they have Spurs this weekend, and I hope this podcast will be out before the Liverpool-Spurs game is decided, I strongly think that if Liverpool hit their form, there are far more bear pits for City between now and their chance of tying up the quadruple. Because I think you have to be utterly exceptional to not drop points from that sequence of Crystal Palace, Spurs, Manchester United away. Sorry, Crystal Palace in London, Manchester United away, Spurs twice at home and once at the new Spurs Stadium, which is another little factor. You know, Spurs noticeably had a horrible time moving into Wembley initially, and simply because they're moving, in inverted commas, home, and the stadium's fantastic and everybody's billing and cooing about it and tickling its tummy. It doesn't automatically mean that it's an advantage, but it should be. You know, the sheer will to win, the sheer joy of being into the stadium, not only because it's very good, but because it's been such an embarrassment trying to get the keys to the new house. That should be a plus. It should be a pretty hostile place to go for another team. And City are a belt of stern stuff, as well as all their brilliance of touch and technique and confidence and squad depth and managerial coaching ability. it should test them really, really strongly. And that's a big long list. Palace away, where Palace is a team that they haven't enjoyed playing against. So Palace away, three straight ties, or three out of these five ties are against a very clever, very determined Spurs side. And then United away in a match where whatever has happened to Solskjaer's team in Europe, the desperation for United to try and trip City up, even if it's to Liverpool's benefit, and the desperation for them to try and have bragging rights in the last derby of the season, theoretically, unless there were to be a Champions League. Can there be a Champions League final in Madrid on June the 1st? I'm saying that with that quizzical note in my voice because I think it's true. Anyway, in theory, the last Manchester derby of the season takes place at Old Trafford amidst that amen corner of games for City. And therefore, Steve, I think that City reached the final. And to be honest with you, I think the City win the FA Cup. I've said to you from the start, I've said to Solskjaer from the start, I have my suspicions that City probably aren't quite yet hard-boiled enough to win the Champions League. Talented enough, I don't think there's any question, but I don't think they're hard-boiled enough. So I think that, Steve, however they progress against Spurs in the Champions League, my guess, my bet, is that the Premier League is going to go to Liverpool this season, and there goes the quadruple, and they'll have to just make do with two or three trophies. Not too bad.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break now. Back soon with more of your questions.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And we're back, and I've got two linked questions for you, Graham. The first is from Gustavo Bagatini. Hi, Gustavo. Gustavo asks, hi, Graham, what do you know of any demands Zidane has made in order to return? Could these be de facto architect powers, as you call them, even without the job title? Thank you, and keep up the great work. And before you answer that, Graham, let's have Lee Allen weigh in on the same theme. Lee asks, am I right in thinking that Zidane is almost untouchable now? You leave with three Champions Leagues, the club falls apart, and then you're asked back. He must have so much power now.
Yeah, I see why they're linked. Gustavo, Lee, I really like the tone of your question, smart. Okay, Gustavo, let's go back to the beginning. I take your point. That's a really shrewd way of looking at it. I wrote and I read a column for Socios and for ESPN readers that my concerns about the way in which Real Madrid are structured and the way in which decisions are made, that they're very monochrome in the decision making, which is just spend on big players. And that the ability to be agile and to plan and to be hyper-modern and to counteract the boom and bust of the pendulum swing that Florentino Perez doesn't encourage, he banks on. Now, the boom is pretty flipping sexy in that, what did they win? 4 out of 5 Champions Leagues, plus Zidane won a league. And there are assorted other titles which, sometimes in the UK, but around the rest of the world where we have listeners, and I don't know where Gustavo and Lee are, but the World Club title is taken very seriously in Spain and particularly by Real Madrid. So there was, you know, when the pendulum swung to the positive side, it was very, very nice. But, you know, we have to remember that just over a decade ago, there was a flurry of coaches and Florentino Perez had to leave, resigned, walked away, and if not in disgrace, but certainly in embarrassment for similar reasons that Zidane was pointing out to him from about January 2018. And in fact, we must be approaching just about the 10th anniversary of Florentino Perez coming back in elections, when Ramon Calderon was wrongly ousted and wrongly accused. But at any rate, the boom and bust, it might be too strong a phrase, but it's not quite a bust. But if you look at the number of league titles won since Capello and David Beckham won the title, I think the number is two. One for Mourinho, one for Zidane. It's a very poor return. You look at the way in which this season has gone for them after finishing a record number of points in the league behind Barcelona champions last season. The pendulum swing back the way because there isn't a great deal of provision for forward thinking, for equilibrium. One of the things that caused Florentino needing to leave because Real Madrid were in a dreadful mess just over a decade ago was that they'd gobbled up all the available big talent. They'd spent so much that then the underlayer of, well, who do we bet on if we're not betting on the favourite? And that's largely what Florentino Perez has been doing. Over the piece, he's been saying, well, if it's a thoroughbred and I know the trainer and the racing world is shouting about him, then I'll buy him. But there comes a stage where you have to bet on, I'm going to grasp for a word now, yearlings. Or you have to bet on a stable where you need really good information about this, these new training methods, and whether the gallops have proven that you're buying something that looks good in the stud ring or is genuinely thoroughbred. And that's where Real Madrid have fallen down, that inability to be really clear about not outside bets, but longer odds bets in terms of Varane when they pipped Manchester United to signing Varane. Or Isco when Florentino Perez said he wouldn't get in our first 11. And Zidane, who wasn't in the coach, said, you're wrong, you have to buy him. And he did. And Zidane at that stage was director of football. So what Gustavo was talking about, for anybody else who hasn't followed that debate, is that I argued that there was a bigger role for Zidane at Real Madrid if he was returning, which was to become effectively director of football and to steer the club and to give the club vision and balance and regularity and who's to be cleared out, which youth team guys are to be promoted, who's to be bought, how to negotiate with clubs, all this kind of stuff. Most of you have heard the idea. And therefore, this de facto idea that, as Lee points out, Zidane now has so much power and influence and has proven his point by walking away and having been for 3 or 4 months saying to the president things aren't right, the president not listening, and then Zidane having won the Champions League in Kiev, after some pretty drastic struggles to get there, particularly 3-0 up and then 2-0 down at the Bernabeu against Juventus, for example. The Bayern Munich tie was pretty hectic. Anyway, my point would be that, I think that you're shrewd in saying that Zidane has some of those powers now at his fingertips because the president was so desperate when he got him back, because his point has been made. But there are two things that don't undercut your argument at all, but two things that don't answer what I was writing when I said that he would have been better choosing the coach than becoming the coach. One is, when you're coaching Real Madrid, it's a full-time nannying job. You are even before you look at the strategy of scouting your opponents, planning how to play against them, you are looking after 20-ish pretty big egos, and you are trying to make sure that they're in line with your daily objectives, your weekly objectives, your periodization in terms of the August to mid-October period, the November to Christmas time, the what happens if we go to the World Club, all these types of things. How to be ready and powerful in March and April, which Barcelona haven't managed, but Real Madrid have. And on and on and on. Before you do all that, that man management, that Aitor Karanka calls it HR, that the modern elite coach is not much more than an HR manager. Now, that ebbs or flows dependent on which club you're at and how giant egos you have in your squad. But, I've been near Klopp recently for the big interview, and he expends enormous amount of energy and time and strategy and brain power on managing his squad and on his individual men, changing their mentality, keeping their focus, making sure that they're happy, tending to little psychological cuts and bruises. So your next job, Gustavo Lee, is to coach and to strategize and to react to defeats and to react to injuries and so on and so forth. You all know what I'm talking about. So then be negotiating with clubs, planning, strategizing in the mid and long term with the president. Well, you need, 27 days in a week and 44 hours in a day. So I can only go so far in agreeing with each of you. Yes, Lee, his degree of influence and power and the degree to which his word now is law currently is very strong. But lose a few games and the fact that he shares initials with Zorro won't sort of leave him as Florentino's fox. It'll leave him foxed. Real Madrid is a club where things move on quickly, and if he was to lose focus and start concentrating on being a director of football with the coach's salary and name, and then trophies were to go a begging or matches were to be lost in Lopetegui style or Solari style, then his luster would dim, because that's the way Florentino Perez is. And therefore, I see the logic of what you're both saying. And currently, Lee, there's no doubt that there has very rarely in the modern era been a more powerful Real Madrid coach than Zidane. And it's been earned in a number of different ways, underpinning all of which is Florentino's absolute devotion to Zidane. But even that will go if the results weren't coming. It would take time, but it would go. That's the way that this president is. So, good question, both of you. Enjoyed that.
Okay, we're going to end it there for now. There are lots more questions to come, and they will be answered in part two of the Q&A available for you on Monday. For now, thanks for listening. Adios.
Thank you for joining us for season 2018-19. We've got huge creative plans for the months ahead, but we do need your help to make them happen. Please go right now to patreon.com/GrahamHunter and become a socio, become a paying member, and get an extra big interview every month plus loads of bonus content. Last season, socios listened to 9 exclusive big interviews, including Rafa van der Vaart, Troy Deeney, Roberto Di Matteo, and loads of me talking about football. The Premier League, the Champions League, Spanish football. I'm sure they enjoyed it and you will too. Support us, join us. Thank you.